This is the March-April edition of Super Science. I'm Chris Radio volunteer Danny Lax. We'll begin with the News Blast section, the latest in science news. Earth Science. Riding the Bike Bus. Every Wednesday, students at Alameda Elementary School in Portland, Oregon, skip bus and car rides to school. Instead, they hit the street on a 2.4-kilometer, for reference, that's 1.5-mile group bike ride to class known as the Bike Bus. Physical education teacher Sam Balta created the Bike Bus program in April 2022 in honor of Earth Day. He wanted to help kids get active while also teaching them ways to reduce air pollution. Most vehicles release greenhouse gases, which trap heat in the atmosphere. This causes climate change. Shorter bus routes and fewer cars driving kids to school means less greenhouse gases are released. The Bike Bus quickly became very popular with students. On average, 150 students at Alameda Elementary participate in the bike ride each week. Climate action can be really fun, and we are having a great time doing it, says Balta. This article was written by Jocelyn Solis Moriera. Getting to school. This circle graph shows the different ways kids ages 5 to 17 travel from home to school in the United States. Public transit or other, 2%, walk or bike, 10%, school bus, 33%, and private vehicle, 54%. Think. Do more students ride their bikes or take a school bus to class? On the left top side of the page, physical education teacher Sam Balta shares videos of the bike bus on social media. Right below that, we see these Portland, Oregon students ride bikes to school in a large group called a bike bus. On the next page, we still have the News Blast section. Life Science, Butterflies at Risk. Every year, monarch butterflies fly from Canada and the United States to Mexico. This migration or seasonal movement is thousands of miles long. Unfortunately, these impressive insects are under threat. In July of 2022, the International Union for Conservation of Nature, the IUCN, officially classified the Northern American monarch butterfly as an endangered species. The insect's numbers have been dropping for decades. The main reason for monarch declines are habitat loss and climate change, says Karen Oberhauser, a conservation biologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She hopes that the IUCN's new classification will bring attention to the monarch situation. She also hopes it will encourage people to help protect the species from becoming extinct. This article was written by Deborah Balthazar. On the right side of the page, we see how to help monarchs. Don't use pesticides, which are substances that kill insects. Plant a butterfly garden with milkweed. Monarch caterpillars eat the leaves, and the flowers provide nectar for adult monarchs. Write to elected officials and ask them to pass laws protecting insect habitats. Spread the word to friends and neighbors about helping butterflies. On the next page, we see physical science. New quarters. Since 1932, all U.S. quarters have featured the same face on the front, George Washington, the first U.S. president. But each year from 2022 to 2025, there will be 5 new quarters honoring trailblazing women and their accomplishments on the back. The nation's coins are made by the U.S. Mint. Designers first create artwork for the coins. The Mint transforms the designs into 3D computer models. These models are used to make devices that stamp the design into metal discs. It takes up to 110 tons of pressure to make coins. I am so happy I can shine a light on their contributions, says Emily Damstra, who designed the 2023 coin honoring Hawaiian composer Edith Kaanka-Ole. This article was written by Maya Fock. On the right side of the page, we see a new quarter honors former First Lady and human rights advocate Eleanor Roosevelt. On the left side of the page, we see composer Edith Kaanka-Ole. On the bottom of the page, we see engineering, recycled blocks. The U.S. produces about 40 million tons of plastic waste each year. But recycling is expensive, and recycling facilities have difficulty keeping up. Most plastic ends up in landfills. Bifusion, a company in Los Angeles, California, wants to change this. Bifusion created a process to transform any mix of plastic into construction material. Machines use steam and compression, a squeezing force, to fuse piles of plastic together. This produces a building block that weighs less than a typical cement block. The blocks can be used to build walls, fences, and more. This article was also written by Maya Focht. On the right side of the page, we see number one. Bifusion fuses bottles, grocery bags, bubble wrap, and other plastic waste into blocks. Number two. The recycled blocks can replace cement ones for construction. Number three. Bifusion's blocks were used to build this pavilion near a school soccer field in Kauai, Hawaii. On the next page, we see life science, shell shock. A giant sea snail in the Bahamas is threatened by overfishing, but there's hope it can be saved. As you read, think about why conch are threatened and how people can help. When people in the Bahamas have a celebration, queen conch is usually on the menu. This giant sea snail lives in the waters around the island nation. It's just not an event without conch, says Agnesa Lundy. She's an ocean scientist based in the Bahamas who has studied the animals. People in the Bahamas have enjoyed dishes like conch salad and conch fritters for generations. Conch is popular with tourists who visit too. Conch anatomy. Check out key body parts that help conch survive on the seafloor. Eyes. A conch has two eyes, which can grow back if damaged. Shell. Grows larger throughout the conch's lifespan, which can last more than 20 years. Mouth. At the end of the conch snout is the mouth filled with rows of microscopic teeth. Foot. This muscular body part flexes, allowing the conch to move along the sand. Claw. Located at the end of the foot, the sea snail moves around by digging its claw into the sand. On the left side of the page, we see each of these discarded shells comes from a snail called a conch that lives in the sea. Back to the article. That makes conch fishing important for the local economy. Thousands of people make their living gathering the snails. But in recent decades, conch numbers have dropped dramatically. Giant piles of empty shells line the shores of the islands. As the population of the Bahamas has grown, demand for conch has grown too, says Lundy. If nothing changes, both the snails and the fishers who rely on them could be in trouble. An easy catch. Conch are invertebrates. A hard spiral shell protects their soft bodies. There's this massive shell and the most adorable eyes you can imagine peeking out, says Andrew Kaw. He's a biologist at the Shedd Aquarium in Chicago, Illinois. Conch gather in herds on the seafloor. They graze on tiny plant-like organisms called algae. Conch also eat dead seagrass. This helps keep the ecosystem healthy. Conch move by pushing their bodies forward using their claw. The process is slow. It makes the snails easy to grab. Conch can't run away, says Ka. Fishers can easily harvest large numbers of the animals. Traditionally, fishers reached conch by snorkeling or holding their breath to dive. That limited the number of snails they could gather. Modern fishers have special gear for breathing underwater. That means they can dive longer and deeper to collect many more conch. On the left side of the page, we see a conch life cycle. A queen conch begins life as an egg smaller than a grain of rice. It develops into an adult with a football-sized shell. Here's how. Number 1. Adult females lay thousands of eggs. Each egg hatches, releasing a baby conch. Babies drift through the water, eating algae. Number 2. After a few weeks, the baby conch's body changes. It becomes a juvenile with a tiny shell. Number 3. The juvenile conch settles on the seafloor. Number 4. Young conch spend their first few years in shallow waters. At about 4 years old, they mature into adults. Think, why is it important not to remove too many adult conch from the ocean? At the top of the page, we see a fisher uses an axe to remove a conch from its shell. Dwindling numbers. A few years ago, Ka and other scientists counted conch in the Bahamas. The researchers snorkeled while tied to boats that slowly towed them along. They examined 42 sites covering nearly 1 million square meters, 10 million square feet of the seafloor. The researchers then compared their count with previous ones dating back to the 1980s. They realized that the conch population had shrunk dramatically over the years. In some places, the number of adult conch had dropped by more than 90%. Most of the conch left on the seafloor were juveniles. That's a problem because only adult conch can reproduce. If fishers remove too many adults, the conch population may not be able to support itself. If nothing changes, the scientists warned conch could disappear from the Bahamas within a decade. Finding hope. Scientists say there's still a chance to protect the conch's future. One way is to create more protected areas where fishing is not allowed. Ko and Lundy think it could work. They worked on a study that found protected areas have larger numbers of mature conch. Their offspring drift into surrounding waters. That gives the whole population a boost. The government of the Bahamas has considered limiting conch fishing season, and scientists are working closely with fishers to find ways to harvest conch sustainably. For example, conch farms where people raise conch in tanks are growing in popularity. Snails from farms can be used for food or released into the wild. The fate of conch in the Bahamas is still uncertain, but scientists like Ko and Lundy believe that the snails can survive. Conch is a part of the culture that is deeply cherished, says Ko. We don't want people to stop eating conch. We just need to find ways to make those traditions sustainable. This article was written by Jennifer Barone. Words to know. Invertebrate, an animal with no backbone. Algae, a group of plant-like organisms that grow in water. Ecosystem, all the living and non-living things that interact in one place. Juvenile, a young individual of a species that has not fully matured. Sustainably, in a way that can continue without using up or destroying natural resources. We see a picture of biologist Andrew Koh measures a conch shell to learn the snail's age. A scientist snorkels and counts conch as a small boat pulls him through the water. On the top of the page, conch salad is a beloved Bahamian dish. On the next page, we see cool steam job. Treetop scientists. Nalini Nadkarni climbs to the tops of trees to study what lives up there. As you read, think about what role plants play in the top layer of the forest. Nalini Nadkarni spent her childhood in Bethesda, Maryland, climbing trees. I wanted to invent a magic microphone that I could plug into the tree and listen to its responses, she says. Now, Nadkarni is an ecologist, a scientist who studies living things and their environment. For 40 years, she has traveled the world climbing trees to explore warm, wet ecosystems called tropical rainforests. Nadkarni focuses on the leafy upper layer of forests called the canopy, about 30 meters, 100 feet, above the ground. She's discovered that some trees grow above ground roots from high up on their branches. The roots get nutrients from soil that forms in the canopy. Nadkarni recently spoke with Superscience about her work. What does the canopy look like, and what lives there? I love climbing from the dark, damp forest floor into the canopy that has more sunlight and wind. In the canopy, you're immersed in leaves, flowers, and fruits. It's beautiful. Many kinds of plants grow in the rainforest canopies, like orchids, ferns, and mosses. These plants grow in soil that forms on the trees. They get nutrients from the canopy soil and have special leaves that absorb rain and mist containing nutrients. Birds, mammals, and bugs feed on the flowers and fruits of these plants. When the plants die, they stay on the branches and break down. This creates soil in the canopy. What type of research do you do? Tropical rainforests face many threats. My experiments investigate how plants in the canopy react to changes to their environment. I've learned that the canopy ecosystem is full of life but fragile. I've studied how long it would take for canopy plants to grow back after removing them. We stripped off long patches of plants from their branches. I thought they'd come back immediately, but it took 25 years for half of the plants to regrow. Now I'm studying how changes in the climate will affect the canopies in Costa Rica. Rising temperatures are creating longer dry seasons in tropical mountain forests there. Why is it important to study trees and forest canopies? The billions of leaves in the canopy provide a lot of energy to the forest. They collect sunlight and convert it into sugars using photosynthesis. Animals eat the leaves for these nutrients. Trees store carbon dioxide and release oxygen. They are habitats for animals and other plants. Trees also provide wood, paper, fruit, shade, and beauty. If we want to use trees, We need to understand what makes them grow, what's bad for them, and how we can help them. How do you inspire future scientists? Back in 2003, my students and I created treetop Barbies, adventure dolls who climb trees and visit rainforests. Years later, in 2019, National Geographic asked me to help with their new project with Mattel, the company that makes Barbies. They were creating explorer Barbies with different science careers who explore the Earth. I suggested what clothing and tools each doll would need. I love that these dolls give kids more scientific role models. This article is written by Danny Levis. At the top of the page, we see plants like these bromeliads grow in soil found on tree branches in the canopy. Below this, we see Nadkari cuts off sections of plants and soil from tree branches to study how they grow back. At the bottom of the page, we see Mattel designed a one-of-a-kind Barbie to look like Nadkarni. At the top of the left side of the page, we see Nalini Nadkarni climbs a fig tree in the Monte Verde cloud forest in Costa Rica in 1988. On the next page, physical science. Going solar. Why more and more homes and businesses are powered by the sun. Flip on a light switch and a light goes on. Have you ever wondered where the electricity that powers that light comes from? Most electricity comes from burning fossil fuels, like natural gas, coal, and oil. But this releases gases that contribute to climate change. Plus, fossil fuels will eventually run out. That's why scientists say it's urgent that people switch to renewable energy. The U.S. government set a goal for the country to use mostly renewable energy by the year 2035. Solar takes off. As more solar panels are installed, the amount of solar power the United States can produce is growing fast. Think, which year showed the fastest growth? In 2012, the amount of solar power capacity in megawatts was just below 10,000. Now, in more recent year, 2021, it is over 120,000. At the top of the page, we see Croatia. People walk on solar panels installed on city pavement. South Korea. Solar panels floating on this reservoir can power 20,000 homes. On the left side of the page, we see Singapore. Solar trees produce electricity at a city park. They also provide shade and collect rainwater for watering plants. On the next page, we continue. One promising source is solar energy, collected from the sun. Today, just 4% of the nation's electricity comes from solar energy. But that number is growing, says Dr. Destiny Nock. She's an engineer who helps communities switch to clean energy like solar. Sun power. Solar energy starts with the sun. Its light and heat are absorbed by devices called solar cells. They convert the sun's energy into electrical energy. That electricity then travels along a network of wires to homes and businesses. Power plants that burn fossil fuels are often located far from cities. That can cause problems. In 2021, Hurricane Ida knocked out power lines, causing the city of New Orleans to lose electricity for 31 days. But solar cells arranged in groups called solar panels can be installed almost anywhere. In parking lots or fields, on rooftops, or floating on lakes. Solar panels located closer to communities may provide a more reliable source of energy, says Nock. Challenges ahead. Solar energy presents both benefits and challenges. Solar panels work only when the sun shines, and they perform best in direct sunlight. Solar panels also need to be at mild temperatures of about 77 Fahrenheit or 25 Celsius. If they get too hot, they don't work as well. So other renewable energy sources will be needed, experts say. Wind turbines could be used at night when the wind blows strongest. Hydropower, or electricity produced by moving water, is another option. Today, renewable energy is more expensive than energy from fossil fuels. But as the country invests more money in renewable sources, the price will go down, says Nock. She thinks the U.S. can get up to 40% of its energy from the sun by 2050. But that will depend on how quickly energy companies build new technology. A mix of renewable energy sources will be important to make sure everyone can use the electricity they need, Nock says. This article is written by Deborah Baltazar. On the left side of the page, we see words to know. Fossil fuel. A fuel like coal or natural gas that is made of decayed plants and animals. Renewable energy. Energy produced by natural resources that cannot be used up, such as the wind or sun. Solar energy. Energy given off by the sun's rays. Solar cell. A device that converts sunlight into electricity. At the top of the page, we see Italy. Solar panels collect sunlight and create shade for cars in a parking lot. Right below that, we see more and more U.S. homeowners are installing solar panels on their roof or in their windows. That can turn your home into your own personal power plant. On the next page, we see more to explore. How solar farms work. Solar farms can contain thousands of solar panels. These devices collect energy from the sun and convert it into electricity that can be used by homes, businesses, and communities. 1. Solar panels convert sunlight into electrical energy. 2. Devices change the form of electricity so it can be carried on power lines. 3. Wires carry electricity to businesses, schools, and homes. Think, why might placing solar panels near communities make electricity more reliable? Go online for a step-by-step hands-on activity. Planning solar panels. Where would be the best site for a solar panels near your school? Use this activity to observe which areas receive the most sunlight throughout the day. Directions. Follow the steps below. Record your observations on a separate piece of paper. Plan. Decide on 2 or 3 times throughout the day when you will observe where the sun is hitting an area. Observe. With your teacher, carefully walk around the school building which areas are in the sunlight, which areas are in shadow. Compare. With your teacher's permission, place your hand on areas in the light and in the shade. Observe and record differences. Evaluate. Repeat steps 2 and 3 during a different time of day. Which areas were in the sun at both times? In the shade both times. Conclusion. Based on your results, which spot would you recommend for solar panels? Why? On the next page, we have earth science. Potty trained cows. Scientists teach cows to pee in a bathroom to help protect the environment. As you read, think about why livestock waste might pose a problem for the environment. Move out the way. This cow's gotta pee, but it won't be doing its business outdoors. A team of scientists recently tested whether cattle could be trained to walk into a stall and pee. Why potty trained cows? It could help the environment. A cow produces up to 30 liters, 8 gallons of urine a day. There are about a billion cows on this planet. The urine they produce mixes with other substances in the ground to form chemicals that can pollute soil and water. Later, microbes, tiny living things, convert some of those chemicals into greenhouse gas. That traps heat in the Earth's atmosphere, causing climate change. Potty trained cows could prevent some of these harmful substances from entering the environment. I wasn't sure we'd succeed, but I thought it was worth a try, says Douglas Alif. He studies behavior at the University of Auckland in New Zealand. Training time. Alif's group set up a latrine, or shared toilet, for the 16 calves in the study. To encourage the cows to pee there, the researchers gave rewards. Rewards help animals learn to repeat a behavior, says Alif. Each cow was led into the latrine. After peeing, the cows received a sweet treat through a window. After 10 to 30 repetitions, the calves turned to the window right after peeing. They'd learned that peeing in the latrine led to a treat. If cows urinated outside the latrine, they were sprinkled with cold water. They found the water unpleasant, and they didn't get a snack. Soon the cows learned they would be rewarded only if they peed in the toilet area. Future of farms. After 15 days, the scientists had potty trained the cows. The next step is figuring out how to make the process automatic. During the experiment, a researcher hand-fed the cows. In real life, a latrine could use sensors to recognize when a cow pees and dispense a treat. Researchers still have questions. They want to know how far cows will walk to use the toilet and how many latrines would be needed for a herd. Another question, what should be done with all the pee? It could be disposed of or potentially turned into fertilizer. This chemical mixture is rich in nutrients that can help crops grow. Alif says that when he tells people about the research, they often laugh. But once they understand it, they see how useful it could be. Sometimes the craziest ideas can be the best ones, he says. This article is written by Andrew Klein. Investigate it. Go online to download a blank sheet answer sheet. Think about the investigation Douglas Alif's team designed. Then answer the questions below. 1. What question did the scientists want to answer in their experiment? Why was that question important? Number 2. How did the researchers train the cows? Number 3. What did the researchers conclude about their question? Number 4. What questions do scientists want to answer next? How might they investigate those questions? At the top of the page, we see 3 pictures of cows. 1. A calf enters the latrine and pees. 2. A researcher gives a treat through a window. 3. If the calf pees outside the pen, it gets sprinkled with water. On the next page, we have Earth Science. Eco-fashion designer. How Maya Penn created an eco-friendly clothing brand. Maya Penn turns extra fabric and used clothes into fresh new designs. As you read, think about how the clothing industry could change its practices to become better for the planet. Maya Penn has always loved to create. As a young girl, she learned from her mother how to sew. When I was 8, I started taking old clothes and fabrics and turning them into new designs, she says. People wanted to know where to buy them, and I got the idea to make my own business. 2 years later, Penn launched her own online store to sell her fashion brand. She named it Maya's Ideas. Her business used unwanted clothes and other recycled materials, and the company donates 10% of its profits to environmental and social causes. That's important because making clothing has many harmful effects on the environment. It uses enormous amounts of resources and causes a lot of pollution. Penn, who's now 23 and lives in Atlanta, Georgia, hopes her company sets an example for the rest of the fashion industry. Out of style. Fashion trends change all the time. To keep up, many companies rapidly produce cheap clothing. This is called fast fashion. Customers fill their closets with outfits that may get worn only a few times and tossed when styles changed, or the clothes fall apart. On the right side of the page, we see Penn tries to create patterns that waste as little fabric as possible. Clothing waste by the numbers. The amount of clothing the average American throws away every year, much of it ends up in landfills. That's about 75 pounds. The amount of water it takes to produce a single cotton shirt is 713 gallons. The estimated percentage of used clothing that is recyclable, 99%. Think, how many pounds of clothes would a typical family of four throw out? Clothing producers use about 53 million tons of fabric each year. Of that, more than 6 million tons is wasted while clothes are being designed and produced, says Jessica Schreiber. She's the founder of FabScrap, a business in New York City. FabScrap recycles unused fabric from clothing brands to sell to eco-friendly designers. Most fast fashion ends up in landfills. A lot of the clothing is made of polyester and other materials that are not biodegradable. These items break down into smaller pieces, which pollute the environment, explained Schreiber. Making clothes requires a lot of resources, too. It takes about 2,700 liters, 713 gallons of water to produce the cotton needed to make one new t-shirt. That's enough drinking water to last a person 2.5 years. The fashion industry has also been linked to climate change. The industry creates as much as 10% of global greenhouse gas emissions. Factories that make clothes produce these gases, so do vehicles that ship products and materials around the world. A fresh look. Penn wanted to create a company that set a better example. She had a simple idea: reduce the need to make new clothes by giving old ones a second life. First, Penn gets old clothing or unused fabric. She finds them from a variety of sources, like thrift stores and designers. I really try to work with what I have, Penn says. Penn uses a pencil and paper to draw her patterns, guides that help her cut shapes from fabric for her clothes. She tries to use as much of the fabric as possible. Once she cuts out the pattern, she's ready to start sewing. Penn uses only natural dyes made of fruits and vegetables, herbs, or tea to add color to her fabric. I often use the spice turmeric for a really bright yellow, she says. Boiling avocado seeds creates a pink dye. You can help. Fashion waste is the result of the desire to be trendy, says Schreiber. Instead of one pair of shoes, people have a pair they'll only wear with one outfit. That's very wasteful, she says. There are things everyone can do to reduce this waste. Focus on wearing what's already in your wardrobe, says Penn. And if you grow out of clothing, give it away to someone else who could still wear it. It's also important to learn how to care for clothing, she says. Learn how to mend and sew from internet tutorials, suggests Penn. And try cleaning a stained item by hand before immediately putting it alone in a washing machine, which uses more water. You can shop at thrift stores or try making your own eco-friendly fashion. Use fabric from clothing you don't wear anymore, or buy recycled fabric from businesses like FabScrap. Embrace your own style and have fun, says Penn. Be a trendsetter. This article was written by Andrew Klein. Words to know: biodegradable. Able to break down naturally over time. Climate change. Long-term changes in Earth's weather patterns, often referring to the rise in temperatures caused by human activity since the early 20th century. Greenhouse gas. A gas that traps heat in Earth's atmosphere. Dye. A substance made from plants or chemicals that is mixed with liquid and used to change the color of something. On the right side of the page, we see Penn works with materials from other designers and thrift stores. Right below that, we see be a fashion role model. Your choices matter. Here are ideas for making sustainable fashion part of your life. Shop in your closet. Wearing what you have rather than buying new clothes saves resources. Care for your clothes. Learning how to sew and remove stains helps clothes last longer. On the left side of the page, we see pollution problem. The process of making new clothes can result in harmful materials being released into the environment. Right below that, we see clothing companies dye denim to give jeans their classic blue color. To the right of that, we see pollution from the dyeing process often ends up in rivers and streams. On the next page, we have data analysis. Record-setting weather. Meet a scientist who investigates weather extremes. During the summer of 2020, a weather station in Death Valley, California, recorded a temperature of 54 Celsius, 130 Fahrenheit. That's just a little cooler than the hottest temperature ever recorded on Earth. Was the reading accurate? It's Randy Cervini's job to find out. He helps verify weather records for the World Meteorological Organization. Cervini gathers photos and records from local weather scientists. Experts study the data to determine if the record is valid. Investigations can take years. Cervini's team is still testing the instrument from Death Valley. Documenting weather extremes is important for many reasons, says Cervini. It helps engineers understand how to design buildings and bridges, and knowing how hot or cold a place can get can give doctors medical advice to keep us safe. This article was written by Jessica McKenna Rajen. On the right side of the page, we see where lightning strikes. These five states have the most lightning strikes per square kilometer in 2021. With the most is Florida, just below 90. In second is Louisiana, just above 80. In third is Texas, with 60. In fourth is Mississippi, with around 55. And right below that, in fifth, is Oklahoma. On the right side of the page, we see high temperatures. Check out the hottest recorded temperatures for each continent. North America, 134 degrees Fahrenheit, Furnace Creek, California, USA, July 10th, 1913. 120 Fahrenheit in South America, in Rivadavia, Argentina, December 11, 1905. In Africa, Kabylie, Tunisia, July 7, 1931. Right below that, Antarctica, 65 degrees Fahrenheit, Esperanza Station, February 6, 2020. Australia, 123 Fahrenheit, Oodnadatta, Australia, January 2, 1960. In Asia, 128 Fahrenheit, Turbat, Pakistan, May 28, 2017. Right above that in Europe is 118 Fahrenheit, Athens, Greece, July 10th, 1977. Dig into the data. Which continent has the warmest high on record? Right below that, we see tornadoes by the numbers. Learn about some of the most extreme U.S. tornado records. Most tornadoes in 1 month, 817, April 2011. Strongest measured winds, 301 miles per hour, Bridge Creek, Oklahoma, May 1999. Costliest tornado, $2.8 billion, Joplin, Missouri, May 2011. Largest tornado, 2.6 miles wide, El Reno, Oklahoma, May 2013. On the last page, we have explained this. Number one, observe. Look closely at the photo. What do you notice about it? What details stand out to you? Number two, think. What do you already know that might help explain an element of this photo? Number three, explain. What do you think is going on in the photo and why? How do your observations support your claim? Number four, discuss. Compare explanations with your classmates. How are your ideas similar and different? What new ideas did you get? Number five, wonder. What questions do you still have? Record them on a separate piece of paper. You can research them later. What's really going on here? Visit scholastic.com/superscience to find out. That completes the March-April edition of Super Science published by Scholastic. I'm Chris Radio Volunteer Danny Lax.